A new series of the legal drama Behind Closed Doors considers the rights of a sperm donor to be involved with his child. First, here's Winifred Robinson.
This Tuesday, a special edition of Call You and Yours will look at the EU in a different way. In the last few weeks, there's been no shortage of claim and counterclaim and opinion about Europe, as the campaigners do everything they can to secure your vote in the EU referendum. But we want to hear about your experience of the EU. Email, please, and tell us youandyours@bbc.co.uk. How has Britain being in the EU affected your life, your family and your work or your business? What's your experience of the EU, good or bad? Email us now, please, youandyours@bbc.co.uk, and leave us a phone number so that we can call you.
Thanks, Winifred. And Call You and Yours begins tomorrow afternoon from 12:15. Now on BBC Radio 4, we begin a series of three dramas set inside legal hearings, behind closed doors. Today's drama is set in the family courts where Harry, a sperm donor, is trying to get a court order to allow him to see his daughter. The barrister Rebecca Nyman is representing the mother, who's now in a lesbian relationship and would prefer Harry to keep his distance. Today's drama is Contact by Clara Glynn.
My name is Harry Venton. I'm applying to get contact with my daughter, Molly. My lord, I have the papers here I can show you.
Mr. Venton, I have a copy of the CAFCAS report, the papers relating to the fact-finding hearing and your witness statement. Is there anything else you want me to read?
I don't think so, my lord.
You need to start off by making a brief opening statement explaining what you want and why you want it.
Yes, my lord.
And, Mr. Venton, we're not in the High Court. You can address me as Your Honour. Are you ready?
Give me a minute.
Harry's an applicant in person, which means he hasn't got a lawyer. I'm opposing him. He's already looking flustered, and I haven't even opened my mouth. It's going to be like mugging a kitten.
I'm Molly's father.
Sperm donor.
Oh. Don't interrupt.
I just don't think he should be allowed to say that.
Beth, I'm serious.
Molly's six now. For the first 4 years of her life, I used to see her about once a fortnight.
Oh, I can't sit here and listen to this. It's just wrong.
Miss Sinclair, because we're in the family division, I try and keep proceedings as informal as possible. However, this is still a court of law. You need to show some respect and wait your turn. Do I make myself clear? Well?
Yes.
Do continue, Mr. Venton.
It looks like my own client's going to make this a little harder than I thought.
Although there were some disagreements, most of the time we were fine. Then in 2013, things started to go wrong. Beth got a new partner, and Melanie manoeuvred me out of Molly's life.
This is such bullshit. Do I really have to sit and listen to this?
Yes, you do.
Melanie applied for parental responsibility for Molly, which I didn't oppose, but then it was as though she decided Molly had two parents, she didn't need three, and so I was surplus to requirements, even though I'm Molly's dad. Before 2013, I used to go round for Sunday lunch, and we'd have a family day together. Now, if I popped round, they were really frosty. Sometimes I couldn't even get my coat off. And when I tried to take Molly out for the day, or even just round the corner for ice cream, it was never convenient. I'd get Melanie on the doorstep saying it doesn't suit.
Mr. Venton, you will get an opportunity to talk in detail later. Please keep your opening statement brief.
Yes. Sorry. It got to the point where I'm hardly seeing Molly. I felt I had no choice. It's not fair. I love her. So that's why I'm here. I want a court order saying they have to let me see my daughter.
Your Honour, I'm here for the respondent, Beth Sinclair. She opposes the application. Mr. Venton is behaving as though he is the separated partner of Miss Sinclair rather than her sperm donor. The contact Mr. Venton has had with Molly in the past is considerably less frequent than he says and has been marred by his erratic and unreliable behaviour. We do not oppose limited indirect contact, birthday and Christmas cards, for example. However, we argue that anything more distresses Molly and makes her uncertain about her place in the world and in her family.
Thank you. Mr. Venton, you are labouring under a considerable disadvantage today, as you are here without a lawyer, and I will try to give you all the assistance I can. In your submission, you described the current situation as unfair. I'm advising you not to pursue this line of argument. The law is completely uninterested in fairness for the parents. My concern, my only concern in law, is what is best for the child. Is that clear?
Yes.
And in order to put Molly where she belongs, at the centre of this case, I intend to begin by hearing from the family court advisor.
She has a rich, imaginative life. She loves drawing. She's into small world play. That's playing with little figures, Playmobil, that kind of thing. Molly is very close to Beth, even clingy. Oh, that's not unusual for the only child of a single mum. For a long time, the two of them have been a unit. And although Melanie is on the scene now, Molly still can feel that it's mummy and me against the world. She over-identifies with Beth, needs to work on realising they're separate people.
I'm not sure that's fair. I'll get to question her later.
So, for example, I asked her how she felt when Harry came to pick her up. She answered that it made Mummy very angry. It was difficult to get her to stop telling me how her mum felt and think about her own feelings.
Mr. Venton, do you have any questions for this witness?
Yes. Miss Haslow, does Molly know I'm her dad?
Yes, in an age-appropriate way. She's not aware of the mechanics of sexual reproduction yet, but she knows children have mums and dads and that she's got two mums and a dad. But she told me her dad spends a lot of time in America and works in the movies.
Is that something Beth had told her?
It sounded to me as though it was a story Molly had told herself to explain why she doesn't see that much of you.
How does she talk about me?
I met with Molly twice. Once at my office without her mother present, and once at her home with Beth and Melanie. When Molly was alone, she said she used to like seeing Dada, that he brought her ice cream, that he'd get her a double scoop with a flake in it, and her mother only lets her have a single one, that they play I Spy. I asked her what she didn't like about her dad, and she said she didn't like it when he shouted at Mummy.
And when you met Molly at the family home?
When I interviewed Molly with her mother in the room, she said nothing positive at all about Harry. She really didn't want to talk about him. She was very resistant. She started kicking the furniture. At one point, she put her hands over her ears and started humming. When I persisted, she said Harry was lame. In my office, she'd called him Dada, but at home, she called him Harry. When children don't want to talk about something, we try and work with non-verbal tools that make communication easier. I've some stickers with little faces on them that show different moods: happy, laughing, embarrassed, sad, anxious, angry, etc. I asked her to choose the stickers that would show me how she felt about Harry. She picked all the anxious and angry ones and piled them up, stuck them all on top of each other.
But, excuse me, Judge, can I?
Yes.
But Beth was there then?
Yes. And Molly looked up at her after she'd finished. Beth wasn't interfering. She was trying to stay neutral. But Molly is a very empathetic little girl.
Do you think Beth has turned Molly against me?
It's not up to Miss Haslow to make a judgment. She's here to give us evidence.
Sorry.
I also observed a contact visit with Harry. It was difficult to arrange. Beth cancelled at short notice on three separate occasions. But I thought it was important for me to see Molly with Harry.
A point of information, Your Honour. On two of those dates, Molly was unwell. She had the flu and was off school. We have a note from her GP, page 78 of the bundle. On the third occasion, my client was away from home at a conference in Nottingham.
But Beth didn't have to be there for me to see Molly.
My client felt it was important for Molly that her mother was there when she returned from what could be a distressing experience.
Oh, that's rubbish!
The time before, she'd come back crying a little heart out.
Enough, both of you. Miss Haslow, could you tell us how the contact visit went when it finally occurred?
The handover was atrocious. Melanie answered the door and Harry refused to speak to her. He walked past her into the house and started shouting for Molly. At that point, Beth came down the stairs and bundled him physically out of the house, shouting at him, calling him names. We stood on the doorstep for 10 minutes. I had to ring Beth on my mobile and talk her into opening the door. Molly was in tears and clinging to her mother. Eventually, she agreed to come with us. I am not confident the visit would have happened at all if I hadn't been there.
But once Molly was with me, things got better, didn't they?
Surprisingly, they did. We travelled on the bus to Harry's flat. During the bus ride, Molly stared out of the window. She wouldn't talk or make eye contact. But once we got to Harry's flat, she brightened up. He has a box of toys he keeps for her, and she rediscovered them with a great deal of pleasure. She started building a Lego castle, and Harry was helping her find bricks. At first, she ignored him, but then she let him help. By the end of the visit, they were playing together in a relaxed way. Harry is sensitive. He doesn't push it, but he's appropriately affectionate. Molly seemed very comfortable with him.
I don't have any more to ask.
Miss Nyman?
Your Honour. How was Molly when you took her back home that day?
Molly held Harry's hand on the bus and walking along the road. She dropped it when we got to the gate. When the front door opened, she ran inside and flung herself into her mother's arms. Harry tried to get her to come and say goodbye, but she wouldn't.
How do you assess Melanie as a parent?
I think she's doing well. She's made a real commitment to Molly. She's sensitive to her relationship with Beth and leaves space for that, but offers Molly warmth and love. And Molly seems very fond of her. Molly calls her little mummy. Oh, obviously, Melanie's quite small, but I think it also reflects a feeling that Beth is her big or main mummy. And Melanie has an important, but a secondary role.
So you've no concerns about Beth and Melanie's abilities as parents?
None at all. Molly is a very lucky girl. She's loved by all three of the adults who've had a role parenting her.
Thank you.
I take it, Mr. Venton, that you wish to give evidence?
What? Yes, of course, yes.
Then will you please walk to the witness box and take the oath? It's on a card.
I swear that the evidence I give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Is there anything you want to add to your witness statement?
I don't think so, no.
Miss Nyman will ask you some questions then.
How did Miss Sinclair first approach you about her desire to have a child?
It wasn't like that. We were... It's hard to imagine it now. She won't even look at me across the courtroom. But we were mates.
You worked together at the Haringey Plant Centre?
Yes. I'd been there 15 years, but I didn't really have anyone there I could talk to. Then she started in the plant nursery. She was in charge of aquatics. She really knows her stuff. They're not easy aquatics. The ugly ones took over the pond and the pretty ones die as soon as look at you. Sorry, got sidetracked there. I meant to say we got on. And that was nice. You know, having someone you look forward to having a coffee break with.
And in one of those coffee breaks, Beth asked you if you'd consider helping her to have a baby.
It wasn't... I knew she was a lesbian. We talked about everything. She did lots of online dating and she'd go to these clubs. It was all quite new to me, the lesbian scene. Some of her stories, she'd make me laugh so hard coffee would come out of my nose. Then one day she'd been round at her sister's and she was really cross with her. Her sister Mary lives in Clapham near the Common and she and her husband, that is, They've got two children. Anyway, Beth was in a real grump. She said her sister was patronising and heteronormative, and she didn't know she was born, so I asked her why.
Shut him up, please, shut him up.
And then she said Mary had got pregnant again and wasn't going to keep it. She was going to have an abortion.
I don't want him talking about this.
Mr. Venton, this is my client's sister's very personal and private business. I cannot see the relevance.
I'd like him to continue.
Sorry.
So Beth offered to have the baby. And Mary said no. And Beth said why. And Mary said because she didn't think Beth was a suitable mother. When Beth told me that, she was shaking. I said I thought she'd be a brilliant mother, and she started to cry. And I asked her why she was crying. And that was it, really.
She told you she wanted to have a baby?
Yes.
Was that when you first discussed donating sperm?
No. No, no way. It never crossed my mind. But, she started looking at all these websites, sperm donor websites. So that took over from dating. And she was telling me stories about that. And there's some pretty weird stuff out there. And one day, I thought, well, I could do this. And it would be good for her. And it would be pretty amazing for me too. So I asked her.
And what did she say?
She kissed me. She thought it was a brilliant idea. At the time.
Do you remember what you said?
I just told you.
I mean how you phrased it.
I said... I said, do you want to use my sperm?
So it was very clear you were offering to donate sperm. There was no suggestion that you were in or going to be in a relationship with Beth.
No. She doesn't fancy men, and no one fancies me. It wasn't a remote possibility.
You were a sperm donor, not a father for her child.
That's the way it started, yes.
It's your contention that this changed over time?
Yeah, in films, people always get pregnant. Women, I mean, straight away. It turns out, real life isn't like that. It took ages, over 2 years, for us to fall pregnant. Beth had one of those test kits that tell you when you've ovulated, and I'd go round there on the best night, and she'd do the deed. Then wait, and wait. Then a period would come, and we'd have failed yet again. It was very tough on Beth.
Did you arrive with the sperm, or did you ejaculate at Beth's?
At first, I'd do it at home and take it in a little container. But then we thought we might have more chance if it was really fresh, so I'd go to her bathroom. I mean, it probably didn't make any difference, but it was like when Skye took over the British cycling team. We were trying to find every little thing we could that would optimise our chances. And afterwards, Beth had read this thing on the internet about lying still with your legs in the air, so she'd lie on the sofa for about an hour with her legs up the wall, and I'd ring for a curry, and we'd sort of make an evening of it. It was nice. That was when we started talking about the baby, really. What it might be like. Whether it would have my nose. That kind of thing.
During those 2 years, did insemination take place every month?
Oh, yes. It felt like the lottery, you know, the one time you don't buy a ticket, your number might come up. I planned my summer holiday around Beth's cycle. My mum was very ill, and I was up and down to the care home in Nottingham, but I always made sure I was back if Beth, you know, needed me.
I put it to you that my client was always very clear that she wanted to have the baby herself, as a single mother.
Yes, I suppose she was.
And your involvement was always limited to what had been agreed initially. You were donating sperm.
I'm not sure about that. If that's all she wanted, she could have got one of those blokes from the internet. She wanted her child to know who its dad was, so when they got those questions in the playground, they'd have an answer. She said, one time when she was lying on the sofa after we'd, you know, I remember this really clearly, she said, I don't think a child can have too much love.
So you were to donate sperm and also be around enough so the child would know who its biological father was. But Beth was to be the full-time parent.
Yes.
I put it to you that pursuing Beth for contact visits with this child, as though you are a divorced dad, is completely inappropriate and disregards the terms of your original deal.
Well, maybe it does.
Maybe.
But...
Beth was quite clear about what she wanted, wasn't she? She wasn't looking for a heterosexual relationship or a part-time father. She was looking for sperm.
The pregnancy was hard for me.
Oh, for God's sake.
Miss Sinclair, do continue, Mr. Venton.
I mean, it had been this huge joint project, then finally, bam, she's pregnant and it's like, go home, Harry, your job is done. I was so happy for Beth, obviously, but for me, well, I don't know. My mother died that spring. It wasn't a great time. Anyway, that was before.
Before what?
When Molly was born, everything was different. When I first saw her, it was at the hospital. She was a day old. She was red and wrinkly and impossibly small. I've never felt for anyone what I felt for that baby.
But she wasn't your baby, was she?
No, she wasn't. She was, is Beth's. And I respect that. I'm not here asking for custody. I know she'll always be Beth's, mostly. I just think there's room for me too in her life, and that would make Molly's life richer and better. Knowing her dad loves her. It doesn't take anything away from anyone, does it?
Over the next 4 years, you did have a relationship with Molly. Though I see from the papers that the frequency of your visits is something you and Miss Sinclair can't agree on. It is common ground that there were regular visits.
Yes, I'd go round. When Molly was very small, I was there a lot. Beth just found it very tiring, being a mum. She was glad of the company and a spare pair of hands. I could cook dinner while she fed Molly. There's a Tesco round the corner, so I could pick up some shopping on my way from the tube. I think I helped. I think she was glad to have me, and we felt like a family.
But you weren't a family, were you?
There's more than one way of being a family. With respect, I think you're being what Beth would call heteronormative. I mean, Beth was a different kind of mum. When you and I were kids, a single lesbian lady couldn't be a mum, and now she can. Maybe I could be a different kind of dad. It could have worked. It did work for 4 years. It would still be working if it hadn't been for Melanie.
Beth says on page 4 of her witness statement that during these 4 years, she'd frequently have a problem getting you to leave. She says she would have to make up excuses to get you out of the house by, for example, pretending that she was expecting visitors.
I don't know if she did that. There were times when she said I couldn't stay because someone was coming round. I don't know if she was lying to me or not. I always tried not to outstay my welcome.
She says on page 5 that when you did come round, you frequently ignored Molly and didn't seem that interested in her.
I have to admit that in the early days I didn't... Well, I had no experience with babies. I mean, I loved Molly, but I just didn't know what to do with her. I was worried about, you know, that thing where if you don't support their head, it might, well, not roll off exactly, but damage them. And anyway, Beth seemed like she needed a bit of grown-up company, a bit of cheering up. So maybe it's true that I concentrated more on her and not on the baby. But as Molly got older, that changed.
I put it to you that there was an element of fantasy in your attitude to Beth and Molly. That you allowed yourself to imagine a greater role in this child's life than would ever be the case.
No, I was part of her life. She called me Dada.
In May 2014, Beth says you started talking about moving in together?
Yes.
Could you repeat that answer, please?
Yes.
Beth says that is when she realised you'd become so wrapped up in your fantasy that you'd lost touch with reality.
I think that's a bit harsh.
You emailed her in July 2014, page 48 of the bundle, Your Honour, and said, if we sold our flats, we could afford somewhere with a garden. You know how much I love you both. Molly could grow up in a real family. Do you accept that was delusional?
No. I didn't mean... I knew she'd never have sex with me. I'm not a complete idiot. But is sex that important, really? I mean, in the scheme of things, lots of married couples don't have that much sex. Apparently. We were friends. We could have shared a house and a child without sharing a bed.
But Beth didn't want a pretend relationship with a man, did she? She emails you back the next day saying it would never work.
She actually said it's a nice thought, but it would never work.
I suspect, Mr. Venton, that she was trying to be kind. Then on 16 separate occasions in the next month, you send her estate agent details for flats. Why is that?
I don't know, really. I just kept thinking about it. I hoped if she saw the right flat, she might change her mind.
I put it to you that you developed a fantasy about a life together with Beth and Molly that seemed infinitely more attractive than your reality.
It would have been amazing, but it wasn't what Beth wanted, so I had to accept that.
It took you a while.
But I got there in the end.
Did you tell your mother about Molly?
My mother died before Molly was born.
Let me rephrase that. What did you tell your mother about Beth and the pregnancy?
I can't remember.
Mr. Venton, you are under oath. What did you tell her?
You do have to answer that, Mr. Venton.
I told her I had a girlfriend called Beth and she was expecting our baby.
Was that a fantasy or a lie?
My mother was... I'd never brought a girlfriend home or talked about a girlfriend. My mother didn't ask me. I mean, I sometimes thought she thought I must be gay. I'm not, of course. I'm just a 38-year-old man who's never managed to find anyone who fancies me. And that is a source of profound sadness to me. And even though we never talked about it, I knew it made my mum really miserable too, knowing she was, well, she was dying. And she was leaving me all alone. So I shouldn't have done that, but I told her about Beth and the baby.
You lied to her about Beth and the baby?
Yes.
No further questions.
This seems a good moment to have an adjournment. We'll recommence at 2:10.
Court rise. Chin and mouth twice in a double espresso.
That'll be us, thanks. I don't know where Melanie's got to. She promised she'd be here by lunchtime. How do you think it's going?
Fine.
I was pissed off with the Kafkas woman. I thought she'd come down on our side. I mean, she saw what a state Molly was in after that visit. How Harry makes us all feel.
She was very positive about you and Melanie as parents.
Oh, I suppose.
How's your sandwich?
What? Oh, it's okay.
We'll try and eat some of it then. This afternoon is going to be tough. I can't get through it on coffee.
I can't believe Harry's dragging us through this.
Because Mr. Venton doesn't have a lawyer, he'll be asking you questions himself. You'll have to keep your cool.
I know.
I cannot emphasise enough how unimpressed the judge is going to be if you lose it with Harry.
I hate that some straight, white, 60-year-old male gets to decide what happens to my Molly.
Excuse me, Beth. I don't want to interrupt your lunch, but could I have a quick word?
What? No!
Let's hear what he's got to say, Beth.
Absolutely not!
Give us a minute, Mr. Venton.
Okay, I'll just be,
The only good thing about being dragged to court is I don't have to talk to that little prick anymore.
Now listen, I've lost count of the number of times estranged parents have reached agreement during the court case. It doesn't make any sense logically, but it happens. And if it's taken getting this far for Harry to realise that he needs to give way, will you be crazy not to hear him out?
Okay, then.
Mr. Venton? You've got 5 minutes.
Right. I never meant it to end up here, Beth. You must know how miserable this is making me.
Then why on earth,
Beth?
Did you
So I'm proposing a compromise. Let me see Molly for one afternoon a month and on her birthday. I'll settle for that.
You just don't get it, do you? I want you out of her life.
And I want to see her every weekend. I'm suggesting something neither of us really wants, but maybe we could both live with.
I'll have to discuss it with Melanie.
Oh, Jesus. That's a no, then.
That's not what she said. Clearly, it has to be a joint decision. Beth, ring Melanie and find out how soon she'll get here. I'll go and ask the judge's clerk for a 15-minute delay so we can discuss this. We'll see you in 20 minutes outside the courtroom, Mr. Venton.
All parties for Court 31, please.
Sorry, I'm late. Hi, darling.
I've been trying to ring you.
I got tied up with some arse who thinks he can get his garden redesigned and landscaped for half what he'd spend on his kitchen units. Hi, Rebecca. I brought you this. Molly drew it last night.
Oh. Wow. A superhero. Batman, is it?
Well, that's what I thought. But she soon put me right. Apparently, it's Mummy's lawyer.
Well, that's a first. Do say thank you to Molly for me. I never said I was Batman.
But you've never been seen in the same room together, right?
We've been offered a deal by the other side. Contact one afternoon a month.
Let's take it.
Really? Honey, we could get something much worse from the judge.
I don't think we know what the judge
is. Let's ask our astronomically expensive lawyer for her advice before we jump to a no, shall we? Please?
Okay.
So, what do you reckon, Batman?
There's two issues here. First, is the judge likely to give you less or more than what's on the table? Going to court is always uncertain, but this case is particularly difficult to call. The law is more liberal and forward-thinking about lesbian and gay parenting than you'd maybe expect it to be, but alternative families, surrogacy, it's all quite a new area of law. There haven't been that many similar cases. The judges are still, to an extent, making it up as they go along. It could go either way.
And what's the other issue?
An arrangement that you've agreed to voluntarily is much more likely to work in practice than one imposed by the courts.
So, what would you advise?
It has to be your decision.
We know that. But if you had to call it...
Personally, I'd take the deal.
Beth?
Give me a minute. No. The answer's no.
Honey, are you sure?
I just can't.
Melanie?
It's her decision.
I'll go and tell Mr. Benton.
In this witness statement, you say you don't trust me with Molly. When have I ever done anything that would make you say that?
What about the time you brought her back from the park covered in blood?
She'd fallen off the swing and had a nosebleed. That sort of thing happens to kids all the time. It doesn't mean I wasn't looking after her.
Mr. Venton, you should be asking Miss Sinclair questions.
Why did you say I was erratic?
You turned up at Molly's school show and insisted that they let you in because you were Molly's dad. When they said you couldn't come in without a ticket, you fell on your knees and started crying. Do you have any idea how embarrassing that was? For me and for Molly.
Molly invited me. She should have told me I needed a ticket.
She was five.
Molly has a right to see her dad. Even if I'm embarrassing and a bit strange.
Is that a question?
Sorry. Give me a minute. I wrote down some questions so I wouldn't... Before Molly was born, when you said to me, I don't think a child can have too much love, didn't you mean that I was going to be part of her life?
Yes, I did mean that. But never to the extent that you thought. I meant you'd pop round occasionally, and Molly would know who her dad was. She wouldn't have to worry about it.
But after she was born, I was round a lot, wasn't I?
You exaggerate how much. I'm not saying you're lying, Harry, but... In your mind, it's more often than it really was.
Okay, but you'd admit it was more than occasionally.
After Molly was born, I had postnatal depression. I was in a bad way for a bit. There were a few of my friends who helped me through it, and you were one of them. But I never thought you were doing it as Molly's dad. I didn't think you were staking a claim.
That time, when you needed me and I could see Molly... That was the happiest I've ever been in my whole life.
Well, I'm sorry, Harry, but this isn't about what makes you happy. It's about Molly. And you don't make Molly happy. You don't even come close. She's got two parents who love her. She doesn't need you or want anything to do with you.
She calls me Dada.
Seeing you confuses and distresses her. Last time she was up half the night crying and she wet the bed.
Well, that's just because you're such a neurotic bitch about it.
Your Honour, this cross-examination, if you can call it that, is extremely distressing for my client and unproductive for the court.
Mr. Venton, I don't want to deny you the opportunity to interrogate Miss Sinclair's evidence, but I do take her barrister's point. So I'm going to ask Miss Sinclair some questions myself. If afterwards there are more questions you wish to ask her, you may do so, as long as you can ask them in a calm and appropriate manner.
Okay, Your Honour.
Miss Sinclair, why are you resistant to any contact at all between Molly and Mr. Venton?
The thing about Harry is you give him an inch, he takes a mile. Harry said to me on the 17th of October last year, I've got the email somewhere.
Page 17 of the bundle, Your Honour.
He said, you always told me I could pop round. Well, I'd never said that. I never would have said that. What I did say, and I only said it once, was I don't mind if you occasionally pop round, which is a totally different thing. And then he's on the doorstep every week.
Untrue!
Arguing about exactly what happened, how many visits there were, and who said what to whom, is a rabbit hole I'd like not to get sucked into. So, thinking to the future. What would be the harm to Molly in having occasional contact with her biological father?
Harry wouldn't respect occasional contact. He would continually be pushing the boundaries. He would make Molly feel uncomfortable and uncertain about her family.
In what way?
He really hates Melanie. Melanie is Molly's other mummy. I can't trust Harry not to destroy that.
The family court adviser said Melanie has a very good relationship with Molly. Do you really think this could be undermined by anything Harry could say?
We're not a normal family. I mean, I feel normal, but we live in a world where most kids have a mum and a dad. There are some single mums at the school gate, but Molly's the only kid she knows with two mummies. Molly's sense of her family needs a bit more protection than most.
There's nothing in your witness statement that alleges Mr. Venton has been homophobic.
No. But I can't help feeling that some of the bile he feels about Melanie is to do with her being a lesbian. The other thing is, I know you don't want to concentrate on the past, but looking at how contact visits have gone over the last year, they're distressing for Molly. And I can't see how that would change in the future.
The Kafka's report said the time that Molly spent in Harry's flat was positive.
Well, it's not just about how Molly is in the room with Harry. Before every visit, when Molly knows they're coming up, she gets anxious. She starts biting her nails again, waking up in the middle of the night. She had a dream once that Harry stole her away and wouldn't bring her back.
Is it possible that Molly is picking up on your anxieties about the contact visits?
Yes. I do get in a state about it. And then she gets stressed and I get more stressed because she's stressed. It's awful. But I'm not doing it on purpose. It makes us both miserable. And then Harry turns up and there's always a scene.
Reading the Kafka's report, you have to take some responsibility for the poor quality of the handover.
I know. I don't mean to. But it's so hard handing her over to someone I don't trust. Then when she gets home, she's all over the place. It takes at least a week to get all of us back onto an even keel.
Against that, do you see a positive benefit to Molly in knowing her father?
I see a positive benefit to Molly in knowing who her father is. We could get that from Harry writing to her. Christmas cards, birthday cards. Then when she's 18, she can look him up. Maybe she'd want to do that. Maybe she won't. She's got two parents. I don't know why she'd need more than that. She's got a family.
Any further questions, Mr. Venton?
No.
I'd like to call Melanie Otway.
I was designing this garden. A system of interlinked ponds for this very fussy TV executive with too much time on her hands. I went to the nursery where Beth works to source the aquatics. She came out to Hampstead to see the job and, well, it just went from there. I met Molly pretty early. Beth said that she was starting to fall in love with me and that if Molly and I didn't get on, there was no future in it. So, well, no pressure. I came round for the afternoon. We went to play park with Molly and it was fine. She's a great kid.
You're very committed to Molly.
Hell yes. Beth and me got married last year. I've got parental responsibility for Molly. She's my daughter. But, like, Beth's the decision maker. I'm the support team. I don't tread on her toes.
How would you describe Mr. Venton's attitude to you?
It's obvious, isn't it? Hostile, dialed up to 10.
Why do you think that is?
He blames me for all this. He's wrong, but I guess it's easier than blaming himself or blaming Beth, who he still kind of wants to be mates with.
What about your attitude to him?
Honestly, he doesn't get to me the way he does with Beth. It would be easier for everyone if he talked to me because I, you know, I've got less skin in the game. Beth gets so wound up. But he won't do that. He won't even look at me.
No further questions.
Mr. Fenton, before you cross-examine this witness, I want to be very clear that if you get angry or behave inappropriately, I will stop your questions.
Yes, Your Honour. Right. Why do you stop me seeing Molly?
I don't. Beth makes the decisions about what happens with you and Molly.
Then why did Beth get so much more hostile when she started seeing you?
I think things have been building up. It isn't just to do with me, but being in a relationship has maybe given Beth a bit more courage about asserting boundaries.
Admit it. You're under oath. You hate me, don't you?
No. I feel sorry for you. I hate that you're upsetting my girls.
Don't you think Molly ought to see her dad?
Yes, I do. If you and Beth could manage it, but you can't. And it's making Molly miserable. It's time to draw the line.
Genetically, Molly is half of me.
And I'm her mum. And me and Beth are family. And that's just something you have to live with.
Thank you. We'll adjourn. I'll be giving my judgment at 10:30 tomorrow. Mr. Fenton and Miss Sinclair are certainly not the first people to have had a baby without sufficiently thinking things through. However, it's a shame, with a conception that required so much organisation, that a little more thought didn't go into planning how things would be for the child. I find that although the original agreement was for Mr. Fenton to be a sperm donor, things changed. Partly due to the level of commitment he showed in getting Miss Sinclair pregnant, and partly due to the relationship he has successfully forged with Molly.
Does that mean we've lost? Not necessarily.
It is contested how much time Mr. Fenton has spent with Molly over the years, but that he has some role in her life is common ground. However, I accept Miss Sinclair's counsel's argument that this doesn't equate to the role of a divorced father in a conventional custody case. There was never an expectation that Mr. Fenton could have an equal parental role. Mr. Fenton is clearly a father, but does that mean he is also a parent? I find Mr. Fenton has a role, but it is a considerably lesser one than Molly's two mothers. He needs to acknowledge that.
Excuse me, can I just say...
No, Mr. Fenton, it's your turn to listen. I accept Miss Sinclair's counsel's argument that Molly is being harmed by the tension around Mr. Venton's contact visits. However, I do not conclude from this that these visits should not occur. All three adults have a responsibility to behave around contact in a manner that does not cause Molly suffering. And they are all three failing so far.
Beth is as white as milk. She doesn't take her eyes off the judge. But she's gripping Melanie's arm so hard, she'll leave a mark on the skin.
I rule that Molly should see her father 4 times a year. That these visits should occur on or around the first weekend of every third month and last for 4 hours. Mr. Fenton can Skype Molly once a month in addition to that and send birthday and Christmas presents.
I won't do it. I just won't.
We have to.
Childhood is fleeting and precious. While your energies and attention are focused on hating each other and contesting this case, Molly's childhood is slipping through your fingers. You can all do better than this.
In Contact by Clara Glynn, Rebecca Nyman was played by Claire Corbett, Harry Fenton, Sam Alexander, the judge, Sean Baker, Beth Sinclair, Robin Weaver, and Melanie Otway and Miss Haslow by Joanna McCullum. Contact was a BBC Scotland production, produced and directed by David Ian Neville.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. Police investigating the mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando say they've processed 100 leads and have identified nearly all the victims. 49 people were shot dead by Omar Mateen, who rang police during the shootings to pledge allegiance to the Islamic State militant group. He was killed in a gun battle. Eddie Sotomayor, who was 34, was among the victims of the attack. His cousin, David Sotomayor, is taking part in a vigil to remember the victims.
It was a horrible moment, but I know my cousin Eddie would not want me to stay home and cry, but come out and fight and be prideful for what they're doing. So I'm here and I miss them. And I can't believe that something so hateful took such a great person away.
Campaigners who want to stay in the EU have condemned the Leave.eu group for publishing a message on Twitter encouraging voters to act now before there's an Orlando-style atrocity here. The Remain group called it disgusting. The chair of the official Vote Leave campaign, Labour's Gisela Stewart, said the rival group's tweet was inappropriate. French prosecutors say about 150 Russians were behind clashes in Marseille before Saturday's match between Russia and England. Authorities say the group was well-trained and ready for violence. Six Britons are appearing in court over the clashes, along with three French nationals and an Austrian. A court in Qatar has given a Dutch woman a one-year suspended prison sentence after she said she'd been raped while on holiday in the country. She was convicted of having sex outside marriage and will be deported. A male defendant was sentenced to 100 lashes. Microsoft is buying the business networking website LinkedIn for £18 billion. The site allows its 400 million members to upload their CVs and professional details. Shares in LinkedIn jumped nearly 50% ahead of the stock market opening in New York. Microsoft shares fell 3%. BBC News.
This is BBC Radio 4. Dan Saladino discovers the world of gut microbes to find that food will never be the same again. That's in the food program. It's coming up in half an hour.
We present The Third Degree, coming this week from the University of Bath.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello, I'm Steve Punt and welcome to The Third Degree, the quiz which is a students versus lecturers competition. Each of the students is studying one of the three subjects taught by the three Dons, so as well as questions on general knowledge, there'll be specialist subject rounds as well. This week we're coming from the University of Bath. Founded in 1966, this is its 50th anniversary year, and according to last year's Times Higher Education Student Experience Survey, it is the best university in the UK for the student experience. Although the students, of course, promptly banned that result because it came from a Murdoch newspaper. It has many honorary faculty and alumni from the public service world of Paddy Ashdown and Prince Edward, via the theatre world of Sir Ian McKellen and Prince Edward, to the absurd fantasy.